when we look at grandma, what did she have passed down to you? When I look at you, what did you pass down to me? The best thing that my parents did was coming over to this country and getting me over here. And now it's time for me to lay that foundation now so that my kids, they don't have to go to college if they don't want to. They don't have to work if they don't want to.
Here's the tempo. I'll give it to you now. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to another episode of The Culture's Money.
Welcome to The Culture's Money.
The Culture's Money is a podcast created to discuss how we multiply the $1.2 trillion in spending power possessed by the American Black community through the vehicles of investing, personal finance, ownership, networking, and most importantly, collaboration. We are the culture, baby, and we are the financing that we've been seeking. Now, let's get into this money talk. And here's your host, Jamal Vitos.
Welcome back, culture members. This is another episode of The Culture's Money. I am your host, Jamal Vitos. Some of you may know me as Leo Grand Prince, but however it is that you know me, I hope you to know me to be an advocate for financial literacy, generational wealth, and generational health. We have another good episode on this one today. This one's a little different. As we get into it, I don't think she's a finance professional, but I think she got into financial literacy just naturally. Like, that's something she's passionate about, so she got into it. And I thought that would be a good thing. I know I brought you guys some guests on who are in the financial literacy profession, whether that's banking, investing, real estate, all by trade as well as personally. And me, myself, I've done both. But I think it's always good while I'm teaching you guys financial literacy to bring on people who just got in on it on a humble, no training, no anything like that. They just did their own research. We'll let you know that people can do that themselves. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Miss Zakiya.
Yes, yes, you did. You did.
Normally I would ask before we go live, but I definitely didn't.
You
do
got
that.
You got it in the bag. You just straight up off the dome, Zakiya, and that was great because people usually butcher my name. But I'm, yes, my syllables. Name is Zakiya.
I'm good with syllables. It's when I feel like people break the syllables down in the incorrect space that it throws me. It's like, oh, it's Zakiya. I'm like, that's not what it says.
Right.
So tell the people a little bit about yourself before we get into it.
Okay. So I am Zakiya, also known as Financial Bay on social media. So I am a content creator, and the content that I like to talk about is a variety of things. I like to talk about financial literacy specifically. And when it comes to financial literacy, my topics range anywhere from business credit to having an LLC to, you know, filing your LLC as an S-Corp. I talk about Bitcoin. I talk about crypto. I talk about Forex. Homeownership. I talk about like everything. So anytime I learn something new about how to get from level one to level two, I like to just share it on my platform. I utilize my platform for that.
That's awesome. Before we get into how many dudes use the whole Financial Bay Corning line in your DMs on Twitter?
Honey. We're not going to get into that.
Okay? Yo, head, just being a dude, I feel like some fool didn't use this Corning line. Like,
some dudes be like, I need you in my life. And I'm like, the consultation link is in my bio. Like, we're not.
I feel you on that, because I feel very much that some women who are attractive, they tend to slide in my DMs thinking that whole bat in the eye and all that going to get them a free consultation. No, this is work. Like, click the link.
Click the link in the bio. Even more why you should support me, because you like me. Hello.
So let's talk about something that I haven't had people on here. I'm not against the currency trading, but I hate the Forex people. Maybe the people that I run into, the ones who be in your DMs
talking about
the business opportunities.
Are you talking about those IML people? Oh my God.
So explain to people what Forex trading actually is outside of the MLM.
Okay, so Forex is just basically trading currency. You're buying and selling currency on the market, and it's in real time. Sometimes some markets that you enter into can be pretty volatile, and it depends on the placement and the time that you enter into the trade. You know, you can either go in for a buy or a sell, but it depends on what time that you enter into the trade and your execution and your game plan and things like that. It's a lot that goes into trading. You know, it's not only just, you know, technical analysis. Also fundamental analysis as well, studying, reading, watching the news cycle, and visiting different websites that give you information on how to trade correctly. You can use technical analysis, you can analyze the chart, you can read the chart, look at candles, and you can draw on the chart as well. But at the end of the day, it's all about execution and strategy. And with the people who do the MLMs, I personally got approached 3 times by people that were a part of IML Academy. The third time I signed up for it, this was back in 2019, I signed up for it. And to me, I just felt like they were more so focused on recruiting people rather than teaching people how to trade. And as an individual, you can utilize sources on the internet. It's a website called babypips.com. I talk about it on my YouTube channel where you can actually learn how to trade for free. And they break down how to trade, what trading is, the different time zones of trading and everything like that.
And that's very important because people all the time hear me talking about, I hate Forex. It was like Forex. I say, y'all know I'm talking about the people being your DMs. I'm not talking about Forex.
Right.
Like
right.
I studied finance in college. I know about currency trading and everything like that. And The interesting thing that people need to approach with currency trading, currency more, even more than stocks, because stocks are impacted by this as well. But currency trading is very much impacted. The volatility comes from the geopolitical climate in that specific region or that specific area. Like if a company is likely, a country's likely to go default on their debt if they miss a debt payment, that'll send a currency crazy. Like, you know, and for over the last decade, specifically the European currencies, those outside of the union, have been wild. Like I remember when I didn't get in, but I remember when Greece was having like that whole default thing, like the currency volatility in Europe was just out of this world.
Right.
So with that being said, one thing I don't know, I know Bitcoin and stuff trades 24 hours a day. Does Forex trade 24 hours a day? I don't get in.
It depends on the currency. It depends on the currency. But yeah, it's pretty much 24/7. It's not like the stock market where I think the stock market closes at a particular time. No, I take that back. When I trade on Forex, I trade crypto. I don't trade the US dollar versus like the Japanese yen or something like that. I trade crypto. So I trade Bitcoin versus the US dollar, Ethereum versus the US dollar, XRP versus the US dollar. So those never close. But
I hope
when
the
you
US
trade,
government ain't on here because I feel like you shorting our own currency, but go ahead.
But when I trade those, that's open like 24/7. You know what I mean? Compared to when I first got into Forex, when they were trading, I think like the US dollar versus the Great British Pound, that around, I think like Friday after 5, the market will close and it'll open back up on Sunday. So that's when you're trading regular currency pairs. When I trade Bitcoin, that doesn't happen. I trade all the time and 24/7 every single day. And, you know, but I don't trade every single day. I only trade when I see something potentially in the market as well. And I think that's also important when it comes to IML Academy or just people who are part of those MLMs. They say, you know, you can just pay me and I'll send you, you know, signals. You can put it into your MetaTrader 4 and then you can jump into the trade. That's not really how trading works because it's based off of your own analysis and what you see. So I personally feel like this is just me specifically. I don't trade every single day. I only trade when I see certain things in the market or if something is happening within, you know, the market.
It's funny that you say that because I tweeted yesterday. I was like, y'all really be on here stressing yourselves out. You literally watch the stock market every day, even though you have a long position. Like you really don't need, like you bought this stock for 5 years from now, but you up here stressed out because the Dow is down 200 points. And what does it matter if you're not going to sell it for 60?
Some people don't really have control of their emotions as well when it comes to trading. And they don't understand like that you have to be in control of your emotions in order to be a successful trader. A lot of the times people feel like, oh, like as soon as something goes down, it's like hell bent and everything is over. And it's like, no, when the market is going down, that's when you want to go into the market for a buy. Like that's when you start to buy up certain things. You know what I mean? But hey.
and for people who think that you can't make money in Forex or currency trading, I prefer to call it currency trading because I think the MLLs have made Forex kind of a negative word now. So I prefer to just call it currency trading. For the people who don't believe currency trading isn't a great way to make money. I forget who it was, but it was this great hedge fund investor in 1992 who shorted the British pound in one day and made like $100 million. Now, I'm not saying that y'all going to always make $100 million, but there is potential, just like you guys do with options and stocks or anything like that, there is great profitability potential because it's a high volatility market. So what I always tell you guys, use all investment vehicles. Currency trading is included in investment vehicles, just like stocks, just like bonds. I want you to use everything in your mechanism to get into that field. So,
right. It's a skill. It's definitely, not to cut you off, but it's definitely a skill worth learning, because at the end of the day, it's nothing that somebody can take from you. You can always have the opportunity to make money as long as you have a phone. So if you can go on a website like babypips.com and learn just the fundamentals, the basics about trading, I recommend it. I'm not saying, you know, you can retire or quit your job, because it's not, that's not ideal for everyone. If you want to, you know, quit your job with trading, you would have to study consistently, like probably like maybe 6 hours a day, like constantly just on your grind. Some people don't have that time set aside. So if you can just learn it as a skill and you can, you know, open up a small account, that's typically what I tell people, like my followers, you know, start off with something not as volatile when you're trading, you know, look at your spreads when you're trading. If you have a really large spread, that means that that is going to be something that is very volatile. You have to know what you're trading and just start off small and then work your way up and grow your account little by little, just like how you and Todd were talking about on the other podcast, how to like just grow your account little by little, just small investments and things like that.
And for those who want to look it up, it was George Soros, a great investor of the last 20th century. I knew I had to get the name, but George Soros, he's the one who shorted the British pound in 1992. So tell me, yours probably like mine, I'm sure your willingness to teach people financial literacy had to come from a love from it personally. What's your story? Is it kind of like mine? I grew up poor. I tell people all the time, I grew up poor. That did something to my spirit. So I had to learn financial literacy out the mud, like my mother, anything like that. So
right.
Did you just get a love for it organically, or did your parents like instill that into you or something like that?
Let me tell you how it started. So my father, he started to own his own business, and I watched my parents work hard. I'm Jamaican, first generation American. Both of my parents are Jamaican. My parents came to this country to kind of find a way of life. They met each other in this country, then they had me. A couple of years down the line, my mom always worked really hard, you know, whatever she was doing at the time. My dad always worked very, very hard as well. We have two parents in the household that are working really, really hard. No one's making investments for our future. We don't have a trust fund, anything like that set up. But I'm not going to say my parents didn't do the best that they could, because they raised a great individual. My father, he took this turn within his life, and I think this is what kind of influenced us, also my mother, but my dad, he started his own business, and that kind of like pushed something onto me and my sister to say, like, you know, I don't think we can really work for somebody else. So then, you know, my father started his own business in 2017. He's still constantly working on his own business. And my mom, in like 2020, she was like, hey, instead of, you know, moving out into an apartment, I'd rather you get a house, you know, become the land of the Lord. If you want to charge other people or rent out the rooms, you can do that. So I was like, oh, really? I never thought of it or ever put it into my mind. But when I started to do house shopping and started to look around and see like there's different type of mortgages, like conventional mortgages, FHA mortgages, my personal credit score, I was able to qualify for a conventional mortgage and get a low interest rate because of my credit score. Keep in mind, my parents never taught me about credit. They were so mad when I got a credit card, but I was able to qualify for a good mortgage. And because of that, it kind of made me want to talk to people about mortgages and how that worked. And then I started to read books. I started to like listen to different types of books. And I was like, oh, like you can actually get business credit and funding for your business without spending your own money. And then I was like, okay. And then I started to invest into stocks. I was like, oh, well, let me, you know, take some money that I have and just throw it into stocks. And then, you know, I started to really go harder with my Forex. So it was just little things, little by little, I just started to kind of get into becoming an investment and becoming more of like an entrepreneur and trying to find ways to fuel what I want to do in life without having to clock in on somebody else's time. This mindset, though, I seen a shift within myself like sometime around September. So I wasn't always like this. I wasn't always on financial literacy, but slowly but surely, just little monumental things in my life pushed me into this direction. And I officially changed like my whole persona into Financial Bae. Like, I finally stepped into my persona probably like maybe a month ago. I finally like changed all of my handles and made myself Financial Bae about a month ago.
Yo, I caught you right on a transition. I didn't even know that when I looked at you.
But I've been telling people, like, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that. And I dropped, like, before I even made my YouTube, I had dropped like a video on telling people, hey, you need to gentrify your own communities. You know what I mean? Like, look at how much this house is worth. You and somebody else, this was like back in the summertime. I was like, you and somebody else, you guys both can purchase this property and do this and do that. So I've been like kind of like telling Black people, like, hey, like, it's time for us to start taking control, like, of our opportunities. We can't, I don't want to step on nobody's toes, but we can't play victim. I don't want anyone to think that you're not able to get to where you want to be based off of some infrastructure or some flaws within our institution. You can do whatever you want to do at the end of the day.
Do you get the pushback that we get? Me and Todd get... We've been getting the pushback.
I was listening to that.
We get the pushback. We be like, bro, y'all act like we're asking you to build a civilization on Mars. Like, they really... They're so stuck in this mindset of, I don't have the money, I don't have the capital, the white man's on my neck and all this. Do you get that sometimes when you say like the simplest stuff, people in your mentions, you're like, what the hell?
Yes. One time when I was on Twitter, it was a tweet, something, they were saying something. And I was like, I was telling them, like, you know, the only way for Black people to get to that level that everybody wants to be at, we all have to become financially liberated. You know what I mean? I'm not, like, it's to the point where it's like, I wasn't getting a job application. Like, I would put out a job application. I knew I was qualified, but I wasn't getting callbacks and I wasn't getting hired. For whatever reason, I wasn't getting hired, whether it's my name, whether it's how I did my resume, this or that. So I've made it my responsibility to say, I don't care. Like, I'm not even going to work for somebody who doesn't want to hire me. I want to build up my own. I want to build up my own foundation to where I employ people. You know what I mean? And I want to just say this, the reason why you get a lot of pushback is because people are not mentally where you're at. You know what I mean? People are still in that employee mentality. And it takes some time for you to come from employee to boss. And everybody's not on that same wave as you. So I was listening to your podcast and I was like, yeah, I feel the same exact way. Sometimes when I say stuff, it go right over people's heads. But at the same time, everybody can't digest the things that you say to them subconsciously the same way that you and me can. So,
yeah. And I think it might be a pragmatic thing. Like, I always tell people that I'm very pragmatic. I've done everything. I've done the 9 to 5. I've had 2 startups that failed. I've, you know, struggled with that. I've gotten jobs in unconventional ways. Like, some people don't know that I worked for, you know, one of the only 20 Black owned banks left in America, the Harbor Bank of Maryland here. I got a job with them by trolling them on Twitter by accident. Like, I was telling them, I was like, y'all systems are so old. Get some, you know, some young blood in it, because y'all old as crap. And the COO and the CFO met me a couple of times over a matter of a couple of months. They offered me a job. Same thing with my first analyst job out of college. I went on LinkedIn and did that. So maybe my experiences have made me know that I got to get it the way I want to get. Like, I've made money on the stock market. I've lost money on the stock market. I've done every aspect of it. And I just think when I'm educating people, I'm thinking I'm just giving the information. I tell people all the time, like, yo, I'm having so many thoughts. Like, if you follow me, you know that I could reel off like 100 tweets in maybe 15 minutes. And people be like, how do you do? Because I'm just doing it. Like, I'm having so many thoughts. I'm giving it to y'all. And so I just don't understand how people go out of their way to get offended. But let's switch gears a little bit. There was one of your videos that really touched me. And I've been thinking about this all the time because, you know, in real estate, wholesale is really big. The flip, you know, the buy and flip is really big. The BRR. RR is really big. House hacking is really big. But you touched on something that very few people touch on that I feel like is a niche that we're missing, which is the acquisition of land and development. Talk a little bit about how you feel about that.
So I kind of fell into what I'm doing right now, which is purchasing tax lien certificates. So I kept coming across this material and this content over and over and over again. And I was like, let me just check it out. So I eventually did my own research. I signed up for a bidder auction with my LLC, and I had my business license at the time. And I went to the auction and I was able to acquire land The land was 7,000 square feet. The taxing certificate was $1,300. And the resale value on that property is, on that piece of land is $45,000. So I'm just saying all of that to say it's an easy way to get into real estate without having credit. You just pretty much need cash, and you just need your, not even for some of them, you don't even need your LLC. But yeah, I basically acquired land with little to no money. There's another element to that though. So there's a delinquent period that the owner of that property has in order to pay off, you know, that taxing certificate. So I have up to a year for the homeowner to pay off that taxing certificate. If they don't pay it off, then that land is mine. That's the only thing. But it's one of those.
Let me pause right there before we. So while you currently own the tax certificate or whatever, are you getting some type of interest payment, something like, how does that work? So
yes.
The position of owning the land eventually?
Let me run it back. Okay. So let me just tell you what a taxing certificate is. So a lien is placed on a homeowner whenever they don't pay their taxes. You have to pay Uncle Sam, hands down, no thing about it. If you owe taxes, the government will place a lien on your house. If the government places a lien on your house, you have a certain amount of time for you to pay that lien off. That gives an investor an opportunity to purchase that taxing certificate at an auction. Mm-hmm. So have you ever been to an auction before? They'll be like, oh, this is worth $1,000 starting off. Do we have any bids? Somebody says $1,000, somebody says $2,000. It's very similar to that. So when you go to the auction, you know, they're going to say, all right, so this house has a delinquent outstanding debt of $1,000 starting off. Anybody wants to place a bid? You have investors that are out there that take that $1,000 taxing certificate and they'll drive it all the way up to $35,000, making it almost impossible for whoever owns that property, that land, to pay it back. And then
is this how it works? Before you go further, mm-hmm. do the investors at the auction say it's $1,000? I paid $15,000.
No, not the investor, but the person hosting the auction. It's usually like a cop of that county as well, and it's okay, outside.
So when the investor buys it, say they buy it for, it was started at $1,000, they bought it for $15,000. So you as the person who bought it at the auction, are you going to tell the person who owns it, no, now you got to pay me $14,000 because I bought this at the auction for $15,000? Like, is that how it works?
Yeah, they have to pay. Bro. Yeah, the homeowner has to pay that. Yeah.
Bro,
they have to pay that. And then sometimes, in some cases, it's not just, it starts off at $1,000 and then you drag it all the way up to $15,000. It goes from $1,000 at the auction, it goes all the way up to $15,000. And then in some instances, if the homeowner wants their house back, they have to pay a 20% interest on top of that $15,000.
You teaching me stuff I don't know. Real estate's not really my thing. I know a little bit about the laws and everything like that, but that's something new I didn't, and especially when it comes to like the land that the houses are sitting on. Because an instance like when the investor buys the tax lien, Uncle Sam's out of it. They've gotten their money. I'm assuming that the auction, the auction actually already paid Uncle Sam. So they've already, Uncle Sam's already been out of the auction, now has it and drives up the price. That's an interesting business. And it could be
because they want to keep their cat. Like, the government will reward you with a house or a land because they want to keep that cash flow coming in. So imagine you, the government, you are, that person has been late on their taxes and you have an investor that's willing to pay the taxing certificate 100%, almost more than 100% of what it's actually worth. You keep that cash flow and then in return, they'll give you the house and then it's yours. And then you can either sell that house at a foreclosure auction, or you can, you know, keep that property and, you know, pay on the mortgage and things like that.
I want y'all to know, y'all can't see it. I'm not sure if this won't make it to like a promo there, but I want y'all to know that Zakiya is over here talking in pure confidence. Not that I would doubt that she would, but the pure amazement of someone who wasn't in the field and is self-taught. Like, you could see it on her face that she knows what she's talking about and she's experienced it. And I just wanted to point that out to y'all, because when y'all be like, I don't think I can have the discipline to do it or whatever, you have the discipline to do anything you want to do. If like that's what you want. Like, if you want to live in poverty, you want to stay in poverty. If you want to get out the ghetto, you want to get out the ghetto.
That is my whole thing. And I want to like pull people out of that victimhood mentality, because if anyone can control your emotions, they can control you as an individual. And I think that's what, I don't know if people on Twitter do this on purpose, but they don't understand how detrimental their comments are to people who are entrepreneurs specifically. I think Black people, the best thing that we do have is entrepreneurship, especially if we feel like a country, the institution is just flawed. We need to build our own. We need to build our own foundation. You know what I mean? And pass it on to our children. Like, I think that's like the goal, and that should be the goal for everybody if they can. Like, I even had to sit my mom down and was like, yo, look, when we look at grandma, what did she have passed down to you? When I look at you, what did you pass down to me? The best thing that my parents did was coming over to this country and getting me over here. And now it's time for me to lay that foundation now so that my kids, they don't have to go to college if they don't want to. They don't have to work if they don't want to. They're going to have something lined up for them so that they can come into this world with nothing but opportunity. You know
what I
mean?
It's a sobering experience as a kid when you got to tell your parents, I appreciate what you did for me. Like, mm-hmm. you did your best and all that. But honestly, it's not enough. And we need to do right. more. Like right. that is a sobering experience.
Hello.
To tell your parents.
I was
parents
telling my
that.
Mom, like, hello, are you trying to be retired soon? Like, what are you trying to do? Like, let me. I was telling my mom, like, look, I know you like your job, but you don't like it that much. You don't like it that much. I'm so serious. You don't, because at the end of the day, like, you have somebody that you have to answer to. We're not doing that. Like, my mom asked me. My mom asked me, she was like, so when are you going back to work? I just looked at her like, girl, never.
Wait, don't talk like, about that. You ain't working? Like, you full-on entrepreneur investor.
Yeah. Yeah, my
bro,
job
check
actually,
this out. Like, my that's job, what I'm yo, talking about.
Let me tell you something. So in February, my job called me. I've been working at this job for about 2 years. My job called me and straight up said, hey, due to the pandemic, we're going to have to let you go. They said, we have another job opportunity for you to work as another position. I said, no, thank you. And I'm going to be out. And the only reason why I was so relieved, I was happy when they laid me off, honestly, because I was like, I didn't know how to leave. I was extremely happy when they laid me off. But it was
Ooh,
to the point
about that. Like people don't be know that is, I don't mean to, but that is a sobering point. There are people who would take the leap, but they don't know how to quit their job.
Mm-hmm.
They do
yeah,
not
they don't know how to let
leave.
Go. Because at the end of the day, not everybody's situation is my situation. So it's like everybody, some people really got the back against, they got they wall against the back, like, and they're cornered with bills, children, responsibility. You know what I mean? So I'm not in that position like everybody is. So thank God, like, I was blessed. I don't have student loans. I don't have a car payment. I don't have anything crazy to where the point where I can leave a job and not really think about it. And again, September, I stopped working for my job mentally. I was just there physically. So mentally, I've been clocked out. So when they came to me in February and was like, oh yeah, we're going to have to let you go. I said, thank God, because I didn't know if I was going to be able to do it or not. You know what I mean? Like,
like you're killing me because this is such real life. Like that's what's killing me. So what's thus far? You've been in this financial, talk about this. Like this could be something you give to someone like me because I've recently just started vlogging. I'm in the beginning ends of the transition from Baltimore to Dallas. I'm moving. And I told people I was going to vlog because it was like, yo, I've all again, kind of like the stock, you know, the stock market or leaving a job. I don't know how to leave my city. I don't. And people's like, what did you do? I just decided to leave. Like, honest to God, if I'm being honest with y'all, I really don't know what the hell I'm going to do when I get down there. Like, I know right. to get an apartment, but I don't know the full strategy. I don't have a 5-year plan. Like, I'm just going to go and I'm going to figure it out. So I'm like, I'm going to vlog that experience, the transition from moving to when I'm there and the things I do. But your YouTube was really, it's really good to me. It's authentic. I've seen it, but I feel like as though I'm very proficient at this audio thing and doing podcasts, the YouTube, I'm still learning because I'm not a good editor. I'm not a girl. I don't know how to do the meshing and all that. So tell people about who have an idea or feel like they have something to share to speak. Tell people, you know, how it works or, you know, how you get the inspiration for it.
So I think a lot of people get hung up in not having equipment and not having the right thing in order to start. If you have something to say, take your phone out, mount it up, get a nice light and start talking on camera and uploading it to the internet. That's literally how you start. If you focus so much on like equipment and all of this, you'll never start. Let me tell you where I used to work. I used to work at Best Buy, and I used to help people with their camera equipment, and people would buy like $500 cameras, $1,000 cameras just to start off their YouTube channel. Every single video that you see on my YouTube channel, I edited it. Any single video that you've seen, it's recorded on my cell phone, and I edit it on my cell phone, and I edit all my thumbnails and put in all of the things as well. You'll learn along the way on how to make your videos the way that you want to make them and make them stand out. My videos aren't perfect. I can't lie. Like, I'm not 100% perfect. I'm not like one of these famous YouTubers out there, but at the end of the day, the content speaks for itself. So if you're putting out good content, it doesn't matter. Like, you just need good lighting and your cell phone, and that's it. And then along the way, just buy more things, buy a nicer tripod. You might can buy a backdrop if you want to, and just keep it like that. But
I can definitely
just
agree
start
with you on that, because on the last season of the podcast, all I had was my cell phone. I was recording through Anchor. Literally, the speaker was the cell phone, everything like mm-hmm. that. And
you
it worked.
Say.
Right. Mm-hmm. It worked. You know, I had some technical issues with some stuff, but this season, I got a computer. I got a mic. Y'all can see. I got mm-hmm. the headphones. I'm listening
it's
to the
levels.
Audio.
It's level.
So I've gone it's up levels. And I was like, okay, I wasn't sure if I was going to do it long term. So let me play around with it. And that's another thing people mm-hmm. don't take into account. You worried about expensive equipment. You don't even know if you're going to be into it past 5 episodes. Like, so just do it with the, in business, we call that the MVP, the minimum variable product. Mm-hmm. I think people forget. And I used this on a consultation just yesterday. A client of mine wants to have a mobile convenience store, which I think is a brilliant idea. Brilliant. And I told her, get a mobile app. I said, I want you to get the mobile app before even the website, because most of your clients and our customers are on the mobile app. And I was like, when I say get a mobile app, I mean the most minimum variable product ever. I was like, most people don't realize this Instagram we got now, this like the 6th logo we've seen. Like, remember what that ugly logo used to look like? Mm-hmm. It looked like mm-hmm. something you would see on an Android. It was the ugliest thing. The layout of the platform was just very clunky and just really weird. Now it's a very crisp platform. It's very nice and everything like that. I don't remember even Twitter. Twitter used to be.
They probably didn't even know that they were going to make it this far. But exactly. It's just they had an idea and they just put it out there and people latched on to it, and they've been going on strong for a really long time. So, yeah.
So tell me what's your favorite asset? Like, do you like stocks more, bonds? Do you like currency?
I'm gonna have to say crypto.
Oh my God.
Crypto is my baby. Like, I love
it. Why is crypto your baby? Is it because it's just the hottest trend right now or what?
I love it because it's like, you don't have to have a lot of money to start, and you don't have to have a lot of like skill to start. Like, you can literally just purchase coins, let it sit in your wallet, and it'll grow over time. That's why I put my grandma onto it. I put my mama onto it. I put my daddy onto it. I open up their own Coinbase account and I just let them transfer some money, because at the end of the day, like, you can invest into stocks, but if you're not doing stock options, you need a lot of money to make money with stocks. You don't need that with crypto. And that's why it's so liberating
isn't options the balance to not needing a lot of money to get into stocks? Like, options
right, but
leverage.
Not everybody know how to do stock options. Like,
everybody don't know how. Please, it's people who ask me every day, how do I buy cryptocurrency? Bro, we talk about this on the timeline every day.
But that's not that hard though. Like, stock options is a little, like, I'm taking Todd's, you know, it's so funny. Like, before I even listened to your podcast with Todd, I actually had his stock options course. And I was like, wow, like, that's, what's the irony of that? So
me and Todd, most people, they don't realize it until like they hear me and Todd on each other's show. Me and Todd go back years. Me and Todd were talking about financial literacy before it was trendy on Twitter. Before it was the new it thing. Everybody was a guru and expert. I was still in college. This was like 2014.
You've been trying to wake people up, huh?
We were like, I was still in college. I was just about to graduate. Todd actually, this is another thing. Like, we started talking. He was actually for one of my failed startups, which was a men's like grooming line. I sent him my prototype to use on his beard. Like, he wasn't even growing a beard at that point. I was like, yo, just use it. He let it grow out to do it. He gave me some feedback. And, you know, the company did what it did. But that's how we kind of grew, like, into, then we ran an investment club together where we weren't getting paid. Like, we were just giving people investment advice. They trusted us with our money, with their money. It got up to like 200 grand we were managing. It was a thing. And so to see the way Todd has grown and prospered and everything, I'm always going to stand on the hill with Todd because, like, you know, me and Charles go back a long way. But it's mm-hmm. funny when people run into that, like a lot of the people have bought his course and then they run into me. And it was like, oh, you know, Todd Capital. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my guy. We go way back. I was like, dang. I was like, what are the freaking odds? Like, I literally just started getting into his. That's what I'm saying, though, because I don't know stock options. Like, I invest into stocks. And just from like one of his episodes, I was like, okay, I'm about to just go ahead and invest. I was like, let me just do his whole course. Cause I'm so like jump headfirst into stuff. Like if there's a way to make money and it makes sense, like I'm going to jump right into it. Like taxing certificates, I went headfirst. I found out about it the next month. I went to the auction and I bought a taxing certificate. Like I'm just so like headfirst.
That's the way it works. That's the way you should do it. But an option, I did kind of what you said you were doing. I got in here first cause people were doing it, but I lost $2,500 in like the first week. And then I paused, went back, and then I started beating options off. Actually, me losing was the best thing that ever happened. Because if I had won the way other people were winning, I wouldn't have learned anything. But after losing that money, even Todd was crazy. He's like, bro, if you had texted me, I would have told you don't jump in that deep. But I'm like you, I had to jump in to see it. And then when I finally got back into it earlier this year, I was beaten in one trade. I beat it by like 400%. I got a 400% return. People was like, what do you know? I was like, this worked for me. Like I learned from what I did and how reckless I was with my strategy. I was approaching options the same way I approached my long-term investments, which was not going to work. And
that's not something that MLM can teach you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, you're in that trade by yourself. You're losing money by yourself. So that's how you're going to learn, by just making mistakes and reading and just, it's like a trial and error. Like people, like sometimes I'll post like my Forex gains. I don't really post a lot, but I sometimes post my Forex games. People are like, oh, what company are you with? Can I join your team? I'm like, I'm not a part of a team. I'm not backed by anybody. Anything that you see me doing on my content, that's me by myself. I don't have anybody behind me. I don't have a team. It's just me. So I'm just saying all of that to say, you have to go out and do the research yourself. I love my platform because I drop little gems for people to go do the research. If you want me to hold your hand though, you're going to have to pay me for that. But I drop the gems and it's up to you as an individual to do your own personal research. Back in the day, our parents didn't have opportunities like this. They didn't have access to the internet where they can just get information at the grips of their fingers. So there's no excuse. Yeah. Like,
and we, none. I thought about this one time because in 1987, when I was born, my mother could have bought $1,000 worth of Berkshire Hathaway. The year I turned 30, which was 2017, it would have been worth a little over $11 million. And I'm like, yo, my mother, yo, she really screwed me. Cause that, yo, you could have made that. But in thinking about kind of what you said, going back in reality, we have to give our parents somewhat of grace because they didn't have access. There was no Google. There was no Yahoo. There weren't no literacy gurus
or people talking about it amongst.
There was no constant information. You had to get your stock information from the paper every morning. Every morning.
Imagine that
wasn't real time, bro. That told you what the market did yesterday. That wasn't telling you what it was going to do today. Right. So when we talk about our parents in a little bit, like not what they're doing now, but what they didn't do 20 years ago, we have to give them a bit of grace because they didn't have the access that we have. Now, if they still playing them games now, then we correct them kind of like the kid said, we correct them now because now they know better and should do better. Or if they don't know better, they have kids who are tech savvy. But I think it's great that you're taking up the mantle of your family. Like, okay, y'all ain't built the generational wealth. Fuck it. I'm gonna do it. I got this. Y'all follow me.
Everybody need to do that. Like, really, like everybody, like whoever's listening to this right now, look at what your parents left you. If it's nothing that you can't pass down to your children, you have to lay that foundation down, period. Like there's no, cause the longer you progress it, the more and more it's going to become harder to do. Back in the day, like you said, your mother could have bought a share and it could have been what it would have been today. Technology is moving at a pace to where it's going to sweep you up underneath your feet. And you're going to look up and you're going to be like, damn, where did all this time go? Where is the foundation that I could have laid for my children? But no, y'all on Twitter arguing with me about financial literacy. So I don't know.
I like how she gave y'all inspiration and shaded y'all at the end. I like that.
I'm just telling you because it's getting real scary. Like, even like with rappers, like they even have artificial intelligence that are taking on personas of rappers, influencers. So even these people's jobs is not secure. So what makes you think my job working at a 9-to-5 is going to be secure? Like, if you don't have multiple streams of income coming in, you are going to drown. And I'm not even trying to say that to be scary. I seen like this article. I don't know how true this is, but I tried to do some more research on it. It said by 2050, the average net worth of the average Black person is going to be, it was like some crazy number. Don't quote me on this, but just look it up.
I think it was saying like something that you were talking about. I think it was almost negative. I think the number was almost negative.
When I saw that, that really like put some fire into me, because I was like, hold on, you said what and what? Oh, no.
And if you want to be a 9-to-5er, cool. If you want to be an entrepreneur, cool. There is room to be a hybrid of both. I want to, like, there is space for you to be both an entrepreneur and a 9-to-5. I do both. I consult, I invest. I'm thinking about getting back into trying my third startup, see how that works.
But and you have do multiple, the nine streams, five,
right, multiple streams. And there's this war that I want to stop between 9-to-5ers and entrepreneurs. There's an even war.
Right.
The 9-to-5ers always talking about, oh, y'all up there glorifying, you know, not getting any sleep, you know, barely eating and all that. And then the entrepreneurs talking about, oh, you working under the man and somebody else sucks your paycheck. Yo, cut that out, especially. The Black ecosystem is so, I always say this all the time, it is such in its infancy. We ain't even crawling yet. We still on our back trying to get our balance. Like, and the fact that we're constantly in this war of trying to kill each other in whatever stage that we're in, yo, we need everybody to get it wherever they're getting it. We still need entrepreneurs, still need bankers. They still need CPAs. They still need
They need people that work 9-to-5 to invest into their business.
And 9-to-5ers need those entrepreneurs because they're your clients, bro. Stop demonizing one or the other.
Thinking
that'll work. Like, let's work together to make everything, you know, cohesive.
But yes, and as a 9-to-5er, like, I really recommend you just finding something, doing your own personal research and finding something to invest into. Find something that you like to do as a side hustle. There is a bunch of reason as to why you should have multiple streams of income so that you can, you know, fuel things. Your 9-to-5 is just to fuel like your investment opportunities and your side hustles. It's not to be your end all be all. You know what I mean? So I'm just going to say, like, doctors, they got real estate property out the wazoo, for example.
But most people and they have a 9-to-5. Like, doctors who own their own practice are both an entrepreneur and a 9-to-5. They got they own the practice, but they have to go to work to get to see the clients, bro. Who's a good 9-to-5er? Jack Dorsey, a creator of Twitter, but is a 9-to-5 CEO of that exact company, bro.
Exactly. And to bring up a point of what you just said, a lot of people have been talking about this Chick-fil-A franchise. And that's another example. If you try to open up a Chick-fil-A franchise, you have to be physically present in the building in order for you to own that franchise. Because everybody's caught up on, oh, it's only $10,000 to start a Chick-fil-A franchise. Yeah, you're going to have to be saying, my pleasure. And you're going to have to be wearing that little uniform and stuff like that. So don't think, you know, like you can just start your... I'm like, y'all, you're going to have to be in there. Like, you're going to be in the field. And for some people, that's not ideal. So I'm just saying all that to say, like,
I think they think they just buy it and then all of a sudden I only come to collect it. No, like the only way you're probably not in that building is if you tell Chick-fil-A, I can't be in every building every day. You gave me three franchises. I need to move around. But if you got one franchise, they not having that nonsense.
You have to be in there as a franchise owner that did the whole $10,000 startup. You have to be in there physically. And that might be ideal for some people. But for me, like, no, I'm not about to do that.
One more thing before we wrap it. How is it? I always like to ask people, how is it when your mindset changes? How did that affect your friendships? Did some of your friendships fall off? Are people, you know, is because your elevation has gone, you know, your way you're thinking has risen? Do people think you're acting funny or you feeling yourself, that type of thing?
To be honest, I feel like people are running away from me. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like people are, when I first started my YouTube channel, I felt like I was a bother to people that were around me, a bother to my friends, a bother because, you know, like I was saying, mentally, they're not on the same capacity that I am on. If I was doing something like selling weed, people would be like supporting me out the wazoo. It's like people try to box you in into a specific category because that's what they're comfortable with. And then when you're not in that category, they don't even know how to appreciate or respect it until they see other people doing it. So a good person, my good friend Bamboo, he told me, you know, don't focus on who's not supporting you right now and don't focus on who's supporting you later. That would drive you crazy. You can't tell the difference between real love and fake love. Just accept it and move on. And that's pretty much what I've been doing. I'm not going to say like, you know, I don't have friends or anything like that, but I have noticed like, I just don't want to even be around people that's not on the same stuff as me. I don't want to be in a room with somebody and we talking about what somebody else is doing. I want to talk about what we can do and what we can get to the next level. And I feel like sometimes people try to suck the energy out of me. And that's why I kind of keep people at arm distance now. Like, I like you and I see you, but we're not hanging out every day. You're not going to be coming with me on my projects and stuff like that. I just want to keep people at where they're at. And that's okay as an entrepreneur. Like, everybody's not going to be on the same mentality as you, and they will bring you down or suck the life out of you or try to ride your coattail. And I keep my coat right here on my hip. So, yeah.
I'm laughing because, like, I'm thinking about my EP. He gonna listen to this episode like, yo, she was on fire. So before we wrap it up, I love to give my guests the last word to the listeners and everything like that. So give the last word of encouragement or anything that you see happening, any industry that you think people should be, you know, shifting towards. I know you're probably going to go into crypto as soon as I let you have the mic.
No, I'm not.
But
I'm not.
Let them know where they can find you, drop your, you know, your Twitter, your Instagram handles, let them know about your consultation, anything you want to let them know. This is the time.
Okay. So for my words of encouragement, I want everyone to know that anything that you want to obtain in life, you can do it. It does start off with a thought. You can manifest things, but manifestation is nothing without action. So if you want to start somewhere, I would recommend listening to a book. If you don't like reading books, listen to books while you're in a car. Instead of playing a rapper's music that's not fueling your mind or building you up, listen to a book about growth and development. You know what I mean? Listen to a book about a topic. If you want to start your business, listen to a book about business credit. If you want to get into real estate, listen to a book about house hacking. Listen to books, read books to push you into the direction that you want to go into. But yeah, that's pretty much what I want to say. Like, come up out of that victimhood mentality. You can achieve whatever you want to do. It's up to you at the end of the day. You might not have a head start like everybody else, but at the end of the day, you can make it to the finish line. And that's what's most important. Not where you start, but where you end up at, where you're going. But yeah, that's what I wanted to say. You can find me on Instagram at Financial Bay and Twitter. So, and YouTube. So my Instagram and my Twitter is the same. It's Financial Bay with two E's at the end. So B-A-E-E. So F-I-N-A-N-C-I-A-L-B-A-E-E. Twitter and Instagram. And then if you just look up YouTube, you can just type in Financial Bay and I'll pop right up and you'll see my little brown face. But I'll pop right up. And yeah, I don't know. I love what I do. And I love to encourage people. And I don't know, it makes me really happy. It almost makes me cry. Like when people tell me that, you know, just watching my videos make them want to get on their stuff and boss up and do things like that. And I was like, that was the goal from the beginning. So yeah.
Oh, and she looked like she had ugly cry, y'all. She gonna give snot.
I will. I will sound like a whale on this thing if you want me to.
So we definitely like to thank Zakiya for coming on. It's definitely, this is actually, I'm going to say it, like I've done, this has to be, I'm probably in like the 30s now with the episodes. This is one of my favorite for real, because I always like it's probably like top five because you're not in the industry like I am. Like I was trained to be in finance. Like, so it's different, but when someone else got it out authentically, like I can relate to that too, because I tell people all the time, like I started investing before I went back to college. Like I started investing a couple of years and then I went back to college, got a finance degree, and that kind of how it kind of snowballed. But I can relate to having that drive in you to just like get the knowledge yourself. Like nobody else is going to give it to me, so I'm going to have to find it. So I definitely, this is definitely one of my favorites. We'll definitely have you on. I feel like you're going to get deeper into some stuff. I feel like that land thing, we're going to have to bring you back on for that.
Yes, I want to give y'all updates on that. And yes, I'm going for sure. To another tax lien auction as well. Because they only do it once a month. So it's an opportunity that you have to prepare. Yes, it's an opportunity that you have to prepare for. So I'll be doing another tax lien certificate vlog. And what time is it? I have to meet up with my realtor today too. So I have a lot going on and I have content that I cannot wait to share with you guys so that y'all know, like I started from zero. Like, trust me, I know what it feels like to lay down and be like, damn, what am I going to do next? Oh my God, I don't have a job anymore. Da, 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 da. I promise you, I'm going to show y'all how to get from point A to point B, period. Like, but yeah.
Period. You heard a period. What did the Jamaican accent? Period. definitely, we're going to bring her on. She's going to keep us updated. This has been great. I can't wait to see what goes on. Per usual, this has been another episode of The Culture's Money, and I'll talk to y'all soon.
Bye.
That's right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Culture's Money. You can follow Jamal on Instagram and Twitter at Leo Grand Prince. That's Leo Grand Prince. You can also get in contact with Jamal via Facebook and LinkedIn. Just type in his name. That's Jamal, J-A-M-A-A-L, Vitose, V-E-T-O-S-E. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time right here on The Culture's Money, baby.